There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Get in on the action with the DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers who deposit $5 or more can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. How cool of a deal is that? All you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. It takes 90 seconds and use the code COLIN, C-O-L-I-N. This is the best deal you're going to find. New customers, it's a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 if your first bet loses. How cool is that? Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Code is COLIN, the crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available. For problem gambling, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, KS, licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/basketball terms for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. Honored to have this next guest. We'll be listing off accolades for a while, but as you know, must get a proper introduction when you come to the Draymond Green Show. So here we go. Two-time WNBA champion, two-time finals MVP, three times WNBA MVP, eight-time WNBA All-Star, eight-time All-WNBA first team, four-time All-WNBA second team. My favorite part of the accolade list, two-time WNBA Defensive Player of the Year.
Let's go.
Two-time WNBA All-Defensive first team, two-time second team. Has the number 9 retired by the Los Angeles Sparks and the number 33 retired by USC. I'd like to welcome our next guest, the great Lisa Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. No, thank you for coming on. This is such an honor. I always crack jokes about you got to be a legend to have accolades to come on this show. And you blow it out the water. So we really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. A lot of hard work, but you know about that. I love defense. So when you said that, I'm like, oh. Every time I didn't make it or get like, you know, all defensive anything, like I really love playing defense, which is why I admire your game so much. I really love the way you play basketball.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, and that'll lead me right into my first question. As someone, you know, who did it both on the defensive end and the offensive end, you start looking at these all WNBA first teams, MVP, finals MVP. I can tell you're not getting those awards by only playing defense. So I just want to talk to you initially. What is your feeling on the defensive side and the offensive side? One thing I always say is, just like defense, you have to have chemistry. Just like, offense, you have to have chemistry. Just like off the offensive end, you essentially kind of have to have sets on the defensive end and different things. What is your take on the difference in how it's viewed on the offensive end and the defensive end as far as our sport goes?
Yeah, I think I don't want to speak for like what's in the mind of these players now, but I feel like speaking for myself, I just always felt like I'm that last line of defense and I have to be reliable. And it comes down to trust. You know, it comes down to trust and reliability. I think of defense like a relationship. You know, I think you have to be accountable and you can't just talk about it, even though communication's key, right? So to that first line is that communication in the back, the same thing that you do. You know, you're back there directing traffic. But we also, because we have high IQ for basketball, that anticipation of what's coming next. And that starts with our scouting reports, right? We understand what's going to be happening, understanding what their offense is and what they're looking for, and then anticipating what they want to do and trying to take that away. But at the end of the day, when I was at the five or at the four, that rotation and coming across blocking somebody's shot, like I live for that. Where my guards know that they can play up and you know that I'm going to be there. Like if we do it 10 times, I'm rotating and I'm there. And I think that is the selflessness of defense. It's really part of it is pride, because you have to take it upon yourself that I'm coming with this effort every single time. It doesn't matter what the results are. I'm coming back. Like you're going to know when you played me, you was in a battle, whether you won or lost. I won a whole lot, but the battle is like, damn, you might circle me on your calendar because you played against me, but you also are like, damn, you better be thinking about that shot you're trying to get off. You know what I mean? And I feel like the consistency of that is just what I love. Like, I feel like the pressure is on the person with the ball, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like when we talk offense, like I felt like my offense was amazing, but my defense is like, I don't have the pressure of the ball. You have the ball. You got to try to figure out how to get in this basket. And as far as I'm there, like I'm really going to be reliable. And I think that's the relationship, right?
Absolutely. It's funny because I was flying back with Steph last night. I mean, yesterday we were coming back from Mexico for practice. And there was a few other people on the plane. And we were talking about the growth of Jonathan Kuminga. And I was telling Steph, actually, I was like, man, he's our number. We were just sitting there talking. I'm like, he's a number two option now. And that comes with a totally different thing. And I said to those guys, and they start laughing, I never yearned for that. Like, I never yearned to be the guy in the NBA that has to go score every night, that has to do. Yeah. I think that comes with a totally different mindset, but also a totally different pressure. Like, whether you have a good game is based on if I make a shot or if I miss a shot. Like, that's a totally different pressure. And so yeah. I agree with you 100% as far as who that pressure falls on. Mm-hmm. And just going back, born in Compton, California, talk to me about growing up in Compton. I've been told that there are people in Compton that's actually never been to Los Angeles. Talk to me about growing up in Compton.
Well, I think first off, let me just say, when you are a kid born in an inner city, we know nothing. All we know is our surroundings. We don't understand what we don't know. We don't understand what we have and what we don't have. So mm-hmm. I feel like being in Compton, I thought we had it great. Like we had our own house. You know, we had our own house. Like we lived in a house. My mom was she's a single mom. I have three sisters, but at that time it was just my older sister and I. And we both had our own room. Like, I'm like, bro, we got our own room. We live in a 3-bedroom house. Now, did I understand square foot and how big it was? Probably not, but that's saying a lot. So I felt like in the situation I was in, I felt very blessed. Like my mom was a very hard worker, and that is probably what I saw most. Like my mom would, at that time, first when I was young, she would carry mail. So she was a mail carrier. She'd get up at 5:30. She would get dressed in her uniform, and then she would leave me, who was, I probably was kindergarten. My older sister is 5 years older than me. So she would go to elementary school on her own. And I stayed in the house. Like Draymond, I was like 4 years old in the house with the key around my neck. I was a latchkey kid. And my mom would turn on the TV. She'd leave me like food out. And she was like, when this show comes on, and she had to take one day off to show me, when this show comes on, then you turn the TV off, you go out, you lock the door, knock on a neighbor's door across the street, and then you walk to school at 11 o'clock, because school started at 11:30 for a kid who went half day. That was it. So it was kind of like I've had to be responsible like from day one. That's all I know. It's like, so it's discipline. It's focused. It's like, don't turn the channel. Now imagine if I was not a good listener and I turned the channel, bro, I probably would have never made it to school because I wouldn't have known what channel. So I never changed the channel. I had to wait for the show, you know, turn the TV off, lock the door. And I feel like just from day one in Compton, it was just kind of this, it was survival, you know what I mean? And I feel like just those survival skills, and yes, it was a kid and it was the streets, but it's still an opportunity to survive, live, figure out what we're going to eat. Then my mom became a truck driver, which then with my mom leaving, there's three girls now. So my older sister, I'm the middle now, and I have a younger sister. We got to figure it out. Like, what are we eating? We did have an au pair or a housekeeper. Someone was there, but it wasn't that great. You know, it wasn't my mom. So who's going to look out for us? Us. And so I just think by me being sort of that child that was just focused early on trying to figure out how to survive, I had a mindset of like, I'm competitive. I can do this. I can figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to survive. So I think Compton taught me survival skills. I can be anywhere. We might go to the hood. We can play ball in the hood. We can go stop by some people who don't have, and I can go to your house and eat and help cook and clean up. Or we can head out to Cabo. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We can go to Paris. We can go to the best of the best. But either way, for me, Compton just taught me that, you know, you love people. I love people. I meet people where they are. I have very low expectations, you know, so I don't disappoint myself with how people show up. Mm-hmm. But I try to show up and just be a consistent person that I just love people and meet where they are. And everybody's not the same. We're not all mm-hmm. the same. We have different backgrounds. So therefore our personalities are different, how we vibe. But I find myself that I can adapt in any situation. And that's really, I think, what Compton taught me.
With your mom having to leave for work all those years early and then becoming a truck driver, where that takes you on the road, did at any point that build some type of resentment within you, knowing that, like you said, there was an au pair, but it's not quite my mom. Like, my mom isn't there. And I asked that question because that's always one of my biggest fears. Obviously, you know how we travel when we're on the, you know, when we're doing this job and how much time you miss. And that's always one of my biggest fears. So I just wanted to ask you that.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't. And this is where my mom was really smart. She sat my sisters and I down and she said, girls, I need you guys to give me 5 years to give us a better life. And I think being 8 years old, I was taking care of my younger sister. I kind of didn't know what that meant, you know, but I understood that my mom was trying to say, I got to do what I got to do in order for us to be able to survive, in order for us to be able to pay these bills, which means I need for you girls to step up and help me and help each other. And so it was pretty much that conversation I never really forget, because I knew that my mom was trying to ask us to be a village, to be a support group to one another. And from that moment on, I just stepped into a different role, which was a motherhood. I ended up raising my younger sister, who's 8 years younger than me. From changing diapers to walking her to school first, and then me going to school and then picking her up from school, just every game I had to leave school, go get my sister. She was in the stands while I was playing, and I'd be like, it'd be a timeout. And I'm like, sit down. You know, I'm like, you know, just mothering her. She was always on the bus when our team went to away games. Like, I really had a child, you know, from 8 years on, 8 years old up until I actually sent her to college. Wow. You know? So I think that level of responsibility, again, it's hard work, it's discipline. It's when I got to go play basketball, that was like my relief, mm-hmm. you know, from real life of being a mom, really, at 12, 13, 14, 15, I'm taking care of a kid. You know, that type of mindset, for me, basketball was the outlet for me to yes. just like, bro, I get to go play. Like, what are we doing out here? You know, like, let's go. And so I really focused on basketball and put like my heart. I was like married to ball. I always say I was married to basketball because that was just my outlet from like real life, you know, ups and downs. Like we got $3. I got to feed my sister, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm going to get her some French fries. And, you know, the fish market was up the street, the corner. Like we got French fries and she got some ketchup and I just sit there and took a piece of fish and watch her eat. And if she didn't, you know, she got full and there was something left, I would eat the rest, you know? Wow. So it was like sacrifice in a way that I was just always a really prayerful kid. That's what I could just tell you that really saved me is just, I was just always praying like, Lord, I just know that you got something more than this situation where we are. And if my working hard can help get us to anything better, then that's what I'm gonna do. I'm the chosen one who's going to work double time. And my younger sister, which is kind of funny because she would always say, you seem like you were just so serious. And I'm like, girl, you have no idea the amount of pressure I'm under trying to figure out what you're going to eat. You know what I mean? Or mm-hmm. when you got to go to bed or giving you a bath. Like I was really being a mom, you know, at 14. It's really crazy, but all worth the sacrifice.
Absolutely. I read, and we've actually spoke about this before, but where you said when you retire from basketball, that you were retiring because being a mom, a wife, a basketball player, it was all just too much. Mm-hmm. And when I look back on that, because I actually have those days sometimes where I sit and, you know, I have a wife and we, like the role that she plays is incredible, but I always try to be conscious and aware of that. I'm not A, just dependent on her to raise the kids by herself, or B, depending on, we got a nanny, I don't have to do this. I always try to throw myself into that fire. And throwing myself into that fire, there's days where I'm like, it's too much. Like, all of these things coming together, it's way too much. What, when you ultimately made that decision, because I, as someone who's kind of building another career for after basketball while playing basketball, not playing basketball is scary as hell. And yeah. to make that decision when you didn't have to make that decision, but solely based on, I want to be great at these things also, and this isn't allowing me to do that. What was it like transitioning to the other side and saying, you know what? I am wrapping it up. I am done, and I'm moving on. Like, did you face that fear of what was on the other side of basketball like a lot of us do?
Absolutely. I think, well, here's two things. I think being in women's basketball before the launch of the WNBA had already programmed most of us. But again, I can only speak for myself, the idea that basketball is not going to last forever. And so I had always had these other goals. Broadcasting, you know, was one. I ended my undergrad degrees in communication because I wanted to do broadcasting. Modeling was something that I always wanted to do. So I had a chance after the Olympics to sign a contract with Wilhelmina, move to New York. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll just be, you know, I'll just model. And then public speaking was something that I had always done because I felt like that was like my spiritual gift, my ability to go out and speak and hopefully inspire, right? So I think I always had these other things that I was prepared to do and preparing to do. Whereas I always looked at, you know, in men's basketball, I feel like you guys have the freedom to just like focus on ball, like day in, day out. That's what you're going to do because the compensation level can, mm-hmm. you can retire and you don't have to work. Obviously it's hard to just stop and not do anything and not have that fire fulfilled. So mm-hmm. I think that's important to do something else like this broadcasting, having this show, all the many things that you'll do. And, you know, when you do retire, it's important, but you didn't have to necessarily think about those things until like now, you know what I mean? Cause you mm-hmm. know, like, hey, how many more years are you going to play? I don't know, but I'm saying, you know, that you're closer to that. For us as women, we were like, always like, just in case this doesn't work out, this is what I'm going to do. And you got to think, I'm from the era now where the WNBA did not exist. Mm-hmm. So most of the women went overseas every year. I went overseas. I played in Italy for a season. And then when I came back, I was working for ESPN. I was doing the women's tournament. I was just working. Like I said, I was modeling. So I had already created the idea that I had other careers and outlets. So I just feel like basketball for me was that one tool that was going to give me the freedom, but also the opportunity to reach these other goals that I have. And I think it's important for all athletes to think about those things. And now that we have so much more access, right, the social media brings us together with the world, with our ideas as entrepreneurs, times have changed. But I always had that entrepreneur spirit from the time I was at USC, because I'm like, I don't even know that I'm going to play basketball. Like, I really thought I was done with basketball after the Olympics. Like, I thought you played one Olympics. I'm retiring, you know, then I'm going to go do, I really thought I was retired. So then they said they're going to start the WNBA. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's like a summer league. Okay. That's cool. I can come back to the LA and play in the summer. I thought we were going to wear like reversible jerseys, play at like Long Beach State or something. Like, I didn't understand the impact of what the WNBA was going to be. So I love it for these young girls now, young women. It's amazing. Like, I'm so in love with, you know, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and just all of these women who are having the opportunity to have a platform that's being watched, to have the NIL deals. Like, I'm so happy for them, because we always have had the personalities, you know, whether it's, you know, obviously our looks were different. We didn't really have, you know, all the lashes and everything because we didn't have access to those things. But I just love where the game has gone and the opportunities that these young women are getting. I love that.
Now, that's interesting to hear kind of your first experience with the WNBA. Because I remember my first experience with the WNBA came, I was 6 or 7 years old, and my aunt, who was playing overseas as well, my aunt Annette Babers, she was playing overseas, and she came back and she tried out for the Detroit Shock. And this was when the WNBA was first kicking off, and I'll never forget, she was the very last cut for the Detroit Shock. And I remember standing outside in the middle of the street, all of us waiting to kind of get the news. We knew the day was the day that we find out if she made the Shock or not. And like I said, she ended up being the last cut and did not make it. And just to see where it's grown to since then, yeah. I think it's very interesting. But something you just said brings me to my next question, which is, you said, all right, it's a summer league. And I actually had this written down to speak with you about. But you said women always go overseas, and we all know they go overseas, make a ton more money than you make in the WNBA. And I think, in order for women not to have to go overseas, ultimately, you're going to have to extend the season. You know, you have a 3-month season, and because, you know, you got to be able to pay the bills. What is your take on the WNBA extending the season, but then how it also competes with either the NBA being on the same schedule as the NBA or the NFL? Kind of what's your take on that, and can the WNBA move into that, or do you think it'll be tough for it to compete with those other leagues?
Yeah, I think, Draymond, it's a great question, because I think it's something that the W has really tried to think about, of like, where is our space? And remember, they've actually moved it up, because we used to start June 15th. Mm-hmm. So now mm-hmm. I think we're kind of, and I'm not saying we, but they play, I think they start May
it's
now.
It's definitely we. You're pioneering that. It's always
I know.
We.
It's like you're always a part of it. Everywhere I go, I'm still a WNBA player. So I'm like, okay. But it definitely started, like, they moved it up, you know, to start in May. But what happens is there's players and foreign players that also still come and play in our league that they're not quite done yet. Yes. So it's always going to pose that problem, because some of the, you know, the teams' rosters at one time was down to 11. Sometimes mm-hmm. they have 13, then it was back down to 11. So when you have 11, but you're holding a spot for 3 or 4 players that are still overseas, even if it's not Americans, it could be foreign players that you've drafted. You're kind of in a tough there. So that's the first part. And then how long the season can go. There's always going to be that tough competition, whether it's the NFL getting started. Television time is really important. But I think, I don't know that I have the answers, but I do think that that may be something they could consider, is to continue to try to stretch it out on both ends, start a little bit earlier if you can get those players back from overseas, and then maybe trying to extend it a little bit. But it comes down to, as we know, money, TV time, those spots. You start getting up against, you know, baseball, World Series, and then at the beginning of the NFL, which is tough. You know, we watch preseason football. I think those are the areas that really, again, depending on where people get their game from. But I believe it was this, wasn't that you and I actually talking about with LeBron? Like the finals fell on Big Sports Day.
Yeah, the finals.
Was it the NFL? Like a game, Sunday.
Yeah, it was like game. It was the NFL Sunday, and the finals were being played at 1 p.m. on an NFL Sunday.
Yeah, it was something that was like, see, bro, that's not good competition. We don't want to do those things. So I'm sure that people that are, you know, really focused on the business are probably trying to figure out ways to make that work, even if it's like a Friday final, you know. But there should be ways that they can continue to extend it and hopefully continue to increase revenue. But I think overall, the WNBA and the Players Association have worked so closely together, and they're building. They're building and they're getting better, and they're further along than where we were when we started in 1997.
We've all had a frustrating experience buying tickets, even me. You all know I love to go to concerts, shows, and it can be hard to find last-minute tickets. You shouldn't have to worry when you buy tickets to your next big event. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets to all the sports, music, comedy, and theater shows near you. I'm looking through the Game Time app right now, and it's really easy to find tickets at different price points. I know it isn't cheap to see the Dubs play anymore, but we got some fun matchups coming up versus the Lakers, the Mavericks, and more. Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. They have all-in pricing, so you know exactly how much you're going to pay. Plus, the Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code word GREEN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Create an account and use the code word GREEN, G-R-E-E-N, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Absolutely. You know what I think will be interesting for the WNBA, and it'll be a bit of, I don't necessarily call it a case study, but what will be interesting is to see where this next TV deal goes for the NBA. And here's why I think so. You start to talk about the big networks, you know, the TNTs, Turner Sports, ESPN,
yeah.
You know, the big deals, you know, the big TV deals that the NBA has. And the reason I say it'll be interesting with this next TV deal, because all of a sudden, wrestling, for instance, the WWE just signed a $10 billion deal or $8 billion deal or something of that nature with Netflix. And so now you'll start to get Netflix who's streaming. We know Hulu. You got all these streaming platforms that I think can also create another avenue to extend the season, right? So, like, maybe it's not just built on TV time, right? Like, if it's just built on TV time with ESPN, TNT, obviously things get a little tougher. But if you can now get some of these streaming platforms and make that a part of the deal, which I personally think that's going to happen with the NBA deal. Like, I think you'll probably see some different packages or whatnot, and like maybe Netflix has something, maybe Apple TV has some of it. But I think that will be possibly an avenue, depending on what happens with the NBA deal, that the WNBA can explore. Because the problem that you run into with a lot of these streaming platforms is, do they have the capabilities of having a million people watching the live event at the same time? And I think that's starting to be created with WWE and then NBA. So I think that may be a route.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think you're right in terms of the change is going to come with streaming. I just think the biggest key is knowing where to find the W consistently. Mm-hmm. There was a time where we had, I believe, if the feedback could say, the negative that I'd say is that we've over-promoted the WNBA in a way that people don't know like it's not consistent on where to find it. It's not consistent. Like we had, and I don't even remember if it was like Lifetime or something, but it was like catch the WNBA every Tuesday and Thursday on Lifetime. Let's just say that's what the advertise, whatever it was very consistent. So people knew, oh, we got to get Lifetime. We got to catch them. The thing that I think we've overpromoted, like we used to say, we got next. That was huge. We should have said what we got next for 25 years because we come after the NBA. That's catchy. I couldn't tell you what the WNBA's catchphrase is now. I don't know what it is. And so I feel like the importance of being consistent, consistency is really important because NBA, I love this game. We heard for 50 years. We understood that that's a part of it. I think the consistency is important of where you can find the WNBA. I believe that the followers of the WNBA and through social media, people will find them if it was consistent, not just I got to search it up and say, oh, today they're on Hulu. Oh, but now I got to have Apple Plus. And then I also over here got to have Hulu. That's a lot. And especially on some of our devices where you may have a subscription to one, but you may not have a subscription to all three. So I think finding the consistency in that is just as important as having that opportunity to have the WNBA streaming live somewhere, wherever that is.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree because consistency is everything. I know on Tuesday nights, the NBA is on TNT, right? Thursday nights, I know it's on TNT. Like, and so you start to get that cadence. You just know where to go for the games.
Yeah. And that's what we need. We kind of, and again, that's maybe not to the fault of the WNBA, but maybe it's just working with networks and trying to fit in where they can. Again, I'm not trying to be like the powers that be, you know, I'm not running for president, people, because I always get, you should be the president. You should be, I'm not trying to do any of those things, but I'm just for suggestions. It's important for marketing for us to find something that we really are passionate about and then stay with it. It's okay to repeat the same marketing for a few years so that people can get the habits of it. You know, we just change so quick. Every year, somebody's got a new marketing job for the WNBA. It's like, last year, we don't have that consistency. So I think that's something I would suggest for them.
Absolutely. You coached in the Big Three, won a championship. We just saw Becky Hammon a few years ago lead the San Antonio Spurs, go coach the Las Vegas Aces, and she's been dominating the last 2 years, winning a championship in both years, if I'm not mistaken. Coaching in the WNBA, never quite wanted to do that. Never a thing for you.
I never say never about jobs. I love to work. That's not a problem. I think the hard part was that, I was still so familiar with all the players there. And yes. I think you need a break of like, you know, I could come in and maybe the new generation have that opportunity. But I feel like, you know, I couldn't go back to the Sparks and coach Candace, who was my teammate. You know what I mean? Like, that's my girl. But it's like, she would just, we were too close for it to really be, I think, a coach-player relationship. So I think over time, it would be better to coach team players. Like now, I think we're kind of finally at the, you know, Candace may be finishing up in a year or two, you know, NECA, like all the girls at Chennai, people that I'm like really close with and have relationships with. I think it would be better when you have groups that you don't have those types of relationship with, so you can just have a clean slate. But I've never really been approached about coaching a WNBA team, to be really honest with you. Not that I've even thought about it or applied for it. I really enjoy coaching the men. I have a good time. And I don't know that it's just because they're men, but I enjoy coaching in the Big Three, I guess I should say. The hard parts about coaching, though, coaching is a lot, man.
Yes, it is.
It's a lot. I mean, you take it home. I mean, I can't stand losing. And I don't like when you're at a professional level and you need to be motivated to do your job. Like, that's probably the biggest part that I didn't really understand. And I think when I looked at my teammates, I kind of was like, as a leader, like, y'all, let's go. Like, we're going to run the lines. Like, don't cut the lines. You know what I'm saying? Touch the line. Like, I've always been that kind of player. Like, don't cut corners. Because if you cut corners now, we're not going to deserve to win in the end. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether we're on the track, we're on the weight room, don't be a player who's late. Like, be 15 minutes early. Like, I'm just that kind of person where the efficiency of how we train affects everything to me. So I'm like, it's already hard. Let's not add to it. Let's not cut corners and then expect the best, you know? And so being that, you know, you're a champion. It's just the nature of it. And so I have a really hard time trying to motivate people to do something that you should be passionate about. You should love, you should be seeing that it is an honor to be able to play this sport, because you could get hurt at any time and not be able to play. So to me, it's like respect the game. And I have a hard time with like babysitting people and just trying to, I don't know. I'm not built like that. So that's the difficult part for me. You know, I think it's one thing when you talk about like high school kids, everybody, you know, some people sign up, you got to pick the best people you have at the school. Every kid's not that, like, that's not their dream, but they may be athletic enough to make a team. Mm-hmm. Okay. But when you're talking about top tier, you're talking about a professional, bro, I don't have time for all the excuses. I don't have time for all of like, I was out last night. Like, don't waste my time. You know, Kobe mm-hmm. and I used to talk about that, which is so funny because I always think about our conversations about just being ready and how you show up, you know, and the fact that you have to tell your teammates, like, we got a game tomorrow. So you might mm-hmm. not want to go out tonight. Like, I shouldn't have to explain those things to you, because my hard work is a part of what we're trying to build here. And I need everybody. We need everybody to win. You know, that's the hard part. So coaching for me, I'm like, oh, I cannot motivate you to want to win. Like, that's all that I know. I'm so bad. Like, it's spades. I'm this way with everything, though. Spades, backgammon, whatever we playing, bro, dominoes. Like, you don't want to see me in nothing, tonk, whatever it is. Like, I am playing to win. Don't sit down at the table with me if you try. Like, what are we doing? I don't like people who just want to play for fun. That's fine. Don't come to my table.
I agree with that. Just so you know, you never want to see me in dominoes. So you should never sit at that table.
Man, come on. I'm slapping bones. What? Is it 20?
Oh, I would love this opportunity. We'll make sure we make that happen.
Yeah, okay. Don't forget you owe me tickets too. No, wait. No, not for when you guys come to Miami.
Wait, next month. Next month. I got you.
I got to take my husband and my son to the game.
No problem. No problem at all.
No, that's all.
So I always say the same thing about coaching. People say to me like, oh, you should coach. Well, number one, I think it's absolutely insane that you've never been approached about coaching a WNBA team. Those things to me doesn't make sense. Like, you know, I have a strong appreciation for the WNBA because of the talent. Like, I think the women in the WNBA are extremely talented. What I love the most is how fundamentally sound the WNBA is. I watch college basketball, some NBA basketball, and it baffles me that guys do not have basic fundamentals. And mm-hmm. you just don't have that problem in the WNBA. At least we can't see it. You know, like, I'm sure if you're in the practice, you're like, man, this girl hasn't got no fundamentals. But for the most part, like, fundamentally sound.
Yeah.
But I think, and me and you have actually spoke about this a little bit before, I think some things that the WNBA do, they shoot themselves in the foot. This being one of them. Like, why have you not been approached, the pioneer that you are in the WNBA? I think you are the first real star of the WNBA. And yet, your first real star, you never go back and say, hey, like, do you want to come back and coach? Like, so we can have you so close to this league because of what you know. You've seen it from the very beginning. You know all of these things. We can have you so close to this league. It's things like that that when it comes to the WNBA, I don't understand those things. Like, you're not helping yourself in all the ways that you can help yourself. That, to me, is baffling.
Well, I'm going to be really honest with you because I don't think I've ever really articulated this publicly. But I do believe that we get it wrong when it comes to the veterans of the WNBA. All of us, not just me, you know, Swoops, Cooper, you know, we can make a whole list because there's obviously a laundry list of us, but we don't get it right. And for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's a women's thing. I'm not sure, but we get pushed out because they're like, well, if you're here taking up the spotlight, people can't see the next one's coming. However, I'm like, well, the NBA have like 75, 100 like great players that come and support. And it's like a, it's a fraternity, right?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
we don't create a sorority. And I'll tell you that from the sparks, that behind the scenes conversations, the WNBA, I have tried. Trust me. So it's not like I haven't tried. It's not like I haven't reached out. It's not like even when I was in LA, I'm like, there's anything that I can do. I wasn't even trying to be paid to help. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of those things where I was like, you know what? This is my last time. I'm going to like really put myself out there to try to help. And then I'm done. And that's when I was like, I'm done. I'll go coach. I can coach in the Big Three. But I wasn't even trying to do it. Like, it wasn't even like a money thing. Really just trying to help and lend my services, like you're saying, like to think about growing the game, to be able to give back. I saw that the attendance was dropping up, you know, things like that. And so it's not that I didn't think of it or try, but I'm sure a lot of the women who are veterans of the league feel that way. And we could do a much better job as a whole of finding ways to support veteran women players, bringing them back. And I'll kid you not, I'll tell you one story. I went to go watch a practice and I was like, oh, and you can let them know if they want me to talk to the players, right? I will go after the practice and I'll talk to the players if they want. Draymond, when I tell you, I mean, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying of service. I'm not saying to be there to like, oh, you know, I'm like, so it's like, this is what I did. Like, that's not even my personality. Mm-hmm. But if there's some words that I can give you to motivate you to like, come out, work hard, like man the paint, like you guys need to crash the boards, whatever it is, like whatever was in that moment, I would have given it to that team just because I'm a spark for life. Like, I'm not just mm-hmm. visiting y'all. Like, I really care about what happens with the purple and gold. And they were like, no, that's okay. No. He or she didn't want you to say anything. I'm like, not a problem. And I leave it at that. Like, that's it. So I just say that to you, not to be like a hater on the outside, but to confirm with you, we need to do a better job as not just the league, but also individual teams of how they support their veterans and bringing them back to be a part of it. And I'll tell you two programs that do an excellent job of it. Dawn Staley does an excellent job with South Carolina in connecting her players to her other players and just creating a community that supports one another. And Gina Auriemma does a very good job at UConn that you see their returning players coming back, 30, 40 players. That is how you build that type of chemistry. It's a culture. And I tried to even... I'm glad that we're starting to see that back with USC because we had those problems before in the past. We have a new coach and Juju is doing so amazing. I'm so proud of her. And you're starting to see other Trojans come back and support. And that's what it's about. Like if we're not building community and no, we're not pouring into one another, like what are we really doing? I don't know. So it's bigger than basketball to me, but we haven't completely figured that out. And I hope that we can do a better job of that in the future because I love our Sparks. I love our Sparks fans. Like every time I'm there, the people are so amazing. The ushers, like I hug and stuff. You know, I just see people that you really care about. And it's just unfortunate that I didn't have that opportunity to do that because I would have.
Absolutely. No, 100%. And by the way, and saying that, and that's why it's no surprise that Dawn is having the success that she's having year after year at South Carolina. And that Gino has had the success that he's had over the 30 years or whatever it's been that he's been at UConn. I think that was one of the reasons I actually went to Michigan State is because Tom Izzo creates a brotherhood. He creates a family. And I'm like, oh, I get to be a part of this family. Like it was kind of down to them in Michigan. And I didn't feel like Michigan basketball was a family. But when you look back at it, they weren't. You see how they did Chris Webber. You know, you see how they kind of outcast the Fab Five. Like, yeah, they had their issues, whatever. But what they did for that program to not honor them. I mean, it's 2024, 2023, and it takes Jim Harbaugh to bring Chris Webber back? Like,
that
doesn't make sense to me, you know? And so it's no surprise that those teams have that type of, essentially, the pedigree that they have in the history because they're doing it that way. But speak to me, Juju Watkins. I had the opportunity to actually work out with Juju, or she came to my workout maybe when she was like in the 10th grade.
Oh, really?
And, and like you could see the skill was there, shoot the lights out the ball. I work out, I still work out. My who trains me, his name's Travis Walton. He was my senior leader when I was a freshman at Michigan State. He's trained me my entire career. We still go hard like we're in college. Like, it's not your typical NBA workout. You go shoot some spots and go to the next. Like, we go. And she came to our workout, and the first day, like, you could tell her skill was there and, like, all the things. She was struggling to get through the workout a bit. And like, you know, I'm pushing her, like, hey, come on, Ju, you got it. Come on, like, pushing her through the workout, pushing. She came back the next day. And when she came back the next day, it said a lot to me. Because it's like, oh, she wants to get better. Like, she enjoyed being pushed. You know, a lot of people, I've seen people come to my workouts. I've had NBA players come to my workouts, throw up, not come back. You know, I've seen all different types. And she came back the next day, and I was like, that young lady has a future in this game. She has the skill. You know, she has the demeanor. She carries herself like she knows she's nice. She came back to this workout again the next day. Now every day, you know, every night you look up, Juju has a game. She breaks this record. She's breaking that record.
I think she broke on mine already.
Like, which, number one, says so much about you that, you know, here we are 30 years later since you left USC, and she's just now breaking those records.
Yeah.
But just talk to me about Juju and what she's doing for the program, for USC as a whole, for women's basketball, and just moving things forward.
Yeah, I'm so proud of her. I think the thing is that when I heard about Juju, which was when she was in high school, and then some of the coaches that were recruiting her, that she was a top recruit. And I was like, so what do you think? Is Juju for real? They were like, yeah, Juju's for real. But they weren't sure if she would be able to keep this level of consistency, right, in college, you know. But you know how, because everybody, this is the talk about, like, Caitlin, like, everybody looks at the next level. Okay, she's balling here, but what is she going to do at the next level? And it's like, when you have that freshman year, when you come out, I had the same thing happen. After I scored 101 points in high school, I went to USC, which was like in 11th place in the Pac-10 back then. But I was like, I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to just go to Tennessee where everybody was winning championships. I wanted to start something new. And I feel like Juju had that same mindset of like, I want to bring it back here to LA. SC was okay. She made SC like, you take it back up to the top. And I feel like that is a big deal in itself. When you talk about that challenge, when you take on the challenge to turn around a program, that's what Juju Watkins is basically doing for LA, like putting SC back on the map. And we've had some great players out of SC, like, for real. So, you know, I love that her handle is like Juju Be Ballin', if you want to hit her on Instagram, because every time I'm like, Juju Be Ballin', like, she really is a baller. And it's like, she's so LA, which is also, a lot of people go to LA, but a lot of people are not from LA. But yes, those of us is like from LA, it's a certain kind of dog in us. It's just like, she really from LA. Like, you know, like Tina Thompson is really from LA. Cynthia Cooper is like really from LA. Like, we are, it's something about like our motor and the way we think, like, you're just not going to outwork us and outplay us. We may lose some stuff, but you're going to know you was in a battle. And I see that in Juju. Like, she just, when she needs to put the team on her back, the team is on her back. But watching her play, like, she's not selfish with it. You know, she's not like over dribbling and keeping it. Like, she's very unselfish. She's a great passer, rebounder, but her ability to shoot the ball is just, it's next level. And I feel like that is like the effect of what your teammate Steph Curry has done for the game has just been, it was almost one of those things when I played in the post and I'm like, if I didn't have an outlet, I'm going to take the ball up. Like, I can bring the ball up. I can push it up. I'm a five, but I can play four. I used to tell my teammates, I only play this position because y'all need me to play this position. I can play any position, right? So that's how I used to think. But I feel like the coach would be like, make the outlet pass and get on the block. Like, you know, coaches used to coach us in a way like you had a certain spot to be in or position. But now we're moving to more of a European style where it's positionless, right? Your four can pull it up. The four can bring it up and actually run the play, call the play, get you into your motion. The same thing that you do, they do in the women's game, where it was very seldom was I allowed to do that. I did it at SC some, but as a pro, very seldom did I do that, like call a play. It was like pass it and get, you know, get down to the block or get to your spot. I love that Steph has changed the game where people never really thought that you were even in shooting range when you crossed the half court. Like, we had a few players I can name. Ruthie Bolton, which people probably wouldn't even remember, could shoot Ruthie across half court and be in that range like Steph. But she didn't get the publicity and didn't have this stage like we have. But Ruthie could shoot long range consistently. Where we were like, Ruthie, we used to laugh, like, where is your range? She's like, hey, as long as I can see the basket, I'm in range. You know, she would say that. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, now we see these players that he's opened the game in a way that you are not out of your range shooting. I don't even, what is the feet? 44 feet, like 45, like, yeah. Bro, they are so far out. And I love that Juju has that long range shot. Just to get back to what you're saying, she has that long range shot. She's in her range, wherever she is, getting to the basket, the pull up, like they are true students of the game. And we can see that in their game, like the way that they play, you can tell that they've studied the game. And that's what I love. I'm passionate about people who are like, bro, if I was in this era, I would be even better than what I was in my era because I can see the game differently now. Mm-hmm. You know, I limited myself. 3-point line came out. I was like, oh, OK, come to the 3-point line, work on my 3-point shooter. I was never thinking cross half court, shoot one from there. Never, yes, you know,
absolutely.
But bro, you, if I was in this era, you best believe my shot would be ready from half court. I just love the game. I love the fact that it keeps evolving and getting better. So you can tell I get so excited, but I'm amazed at Juju and what she's been able to do and the talents continue to get better. So fight on. I got my burgundy on.
I love it. I love it. And Juju has to stay in college for at least 3 years. Kind of, what's your take on that? Like, what, obviously the goal for all of us is to get to the NBA, is to get to the WNBA. But she has to stay there for 2 more years once this season concludes. What's your take on the age requirement in the WNBA? As far, I think if Juju could leave this year, she'd definitely be the number one and number two pick. You know, and so, like, kind of how do you view that as far as the women's game go?
That's good. That's good. I don't think we originally had seen a player or players now that really could make that jump. And here's why I say that. We played both college ball, but we also played on the USA team. And playing on the USA team brought, like myself, I was 16, a high schooler versus college women. And I held my own, but was I ready to be an Olympian? No. I was good, but I was a 10th grader, you know, with college players. Now you cut two and you say, well, she's a freshman in college. I think the biggest test first would be the USA team, because how she would manage with those pros would then tell you if she could truly play in the WNBA. I think we're getting to that point now. I don't think that Juju could get out there and not be effective. But also, it's kind of that same thing, the body, the physicality of it. It changes a lot. Defense, you know, you may be strong offensively, but how's your defense? Because you got some ballers to guard in the WNBA also.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of times the rookie year for guards is actually harder than it is for the post. Mm-hmm. I find that all of the guards, if we like went back in time and you looked at like number one pick guards, their first years in the W is not like all-star years. They mm-hmm. really struggle because you being D'd up in a way like, I got you and I don't need to go help nobody else. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Whereas college is sort of that system. You know, you got that rotation. Sometimes coaches just like, stay on her. Like, she not getting off today. That's the decision of the coach, which means I'm on you. How are you going to get the buckets that you're used to getting when I'm staying with you? And we have defenders like that and coaches that make those types of decisions. So I think that for the guards, they struggle a little bit. But could Juju go into the WNBA and just be like solid? I think so. I really do. I think she could. Should they change the rules? I don't know about that, but I think she'd have success.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I think, you know, and like there's levels to the success, right? Like you come in, the likelihood of anyone coming from college and being a superstar right away.
It happens.
Facts.
But it's few.
CP.
And also,
you look at CP, though, she's all true. But like, Aaliyah Boston's probably going to be along the lines of Candace Parker, one of the all-time greats, too. So, you know, the people always would talk about when, you know, when they had the high school rule, when you could come out of high school in the NBA. For every Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, there was also Melvin Ely or I'm going to butcher this name, but EBNB or his name was something. Like, you also have some of those guys as well.
Exactly.
More of those guys
yep.
than you necessarily do the Kobe Bryant and Kevin Garnett who's actually able to figure it out.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question is going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun.
And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And to your point, their rookie year, though, is not stellar.
Exactly.
You know, and so that's my point too, is that you can come out, but that rookie year, sometimes it's a lot. One, they're coming out of their college season, so you're kind of fatigued because we're starting, like you said, early May. Mm-hmm. If you went to a championship, you just finished April 8th, 7th, yep. somewhere around there. Now you got to come into a training camp and you got to play a full season. A lot of times you have that dip happens there. The other thing is just the overall sheer heart of these veterans. Mm-hmm. That have that defensive mindset to like, oh, you're not about to come in here and bust me up. You know what I mean? That's how we used to be. Like, oh, it's a rookie. Not on my watch. Like, mm-hmm. not today. You know what I mean? You might have a good game somewhere else, but you're not about to have it. So I don't know how many dogs we have like that in the WNBA. I don't know about the defense. But I know when we play, like if I told Swoops, if you saw any guard that was coming in, like our USA team, I could speak to probably more. But I'm like, Swoops was like, Swoops. The defense there, Nikki McRae, The defense, like, you're not going to see the light of day because we had certain people that was just defense on guards. You're not going to have a chance. Ruthie Bolden, like, you're not going to have a chance to get what you've ever gotten in college. You know, we had that. Post, same thing with me. It's like, no, today, sis, I'm about to take a whole, it's a full clinic. You know, my footwork, left, right, underneath, spin move, it doesn't matter. Fade away, like, you can't stop all of this. So I feel like it depends on how the players in the WNBA take on that grit and the idea that you are a rookie coming in here and today you're not going to have the kind of game that you're used to. That's going to be the biggest decision on how and if I think Caitlin Clark will have major success in the WNBA. I think she will because her range is one of those things. It's just like Steph. You can get on him, but the fact that his range is limitless, not everybody can play defense starting at half court and really maintain the movement that they have and still guard them and their range and their the 6 seconds that it takes for them to get the shot off. Like, it's not even 6 seconds. What is it? A 0.6? Like,
points, yeah, like 6/10 of a second.
Of a second or something they said. Like,
absolutely.
You know, so I don't know. I love it though. I'm a fan of all of this. I can't wait to see it unfold. And yeah, so it's unfortunate Juju has to stay probably 3 more years though.
great for the Trojans.
Yes, spite on.
you just mentioned her. Candace Parker won MVP her rookie year, which was just second to last year in the league. Seeing a young player come in and dominate on the team with you. Like that. What was your take on her and like having the opportunity to play with her, mentor her initially coming in? Like, what was that opportunity like for you?
You know what? It was so interesting because Candace and I have always gotten along from day one and people always thought we would not get along or implied that we wouldn't get along or all these things. And I was very, I was happy. I was, you know, I'm motherly. So I was just trying to, I think the small things that I would try to help Candace with was just her like weights. I'm like, Candace, sweetheart, we gotta, like, we lift weights every day. I lift weights before pretty much every day and after games because your body is like, our season is too short. It's a game, you know, it's a game every other day. You have to stay in the weight room. And then her food, you know, I used to make her oatmeal and make her stuff. And like, she lived, I don't know if we lived in the same building for a little while. Yeah, we did. So I would like make her oatmeal and just trying to, you know, be a mentor. I think more than anything else of just to be a pro is different from college because everything is not given to you. It's like, you have to start to make choices. So I think the biggest impact that I had on Candace, and I guess you probably have to ask her, but just trying to be more of a mentor of like this process as a rookie. You got to learn to respect everybody, you know, and she's fun. Candace is hilarious though. Cause she's like, who's that other girl? I'm like, that's one of our teammates. And she's like, I don't understand why she's trying to tell me what to do. Like, she don't even play. And I'm like, Candace, no, baby, no, you can't. It doesn't work like that. It's like, she's watching us play. So she has valuable information that can be helpful to us, you know? So it's like, be open to everybody. You can learn from anybody. And she's an amazing veteran and a person that I trust. Like you could, like when I get subbed out, I would go sit, you know, and I'm asking different teammates, which y'all see, like, what could I do? You know, they like leave you fading on your jumper or you late on your rotation or whatever, anything. I can learn from anybody here. And so I think it's so important to that camaraderie is just not about the five who get to play or the starters. It's about everybody. Clearly, she's an amazing leader. She's grown so much. She became so much like healthier with her eating in the weight room, staying strong and shit. We always laugh about it now. She was like, girl, I was a mess. I was like, I just couldn't believe her mindset of like her, the teammates. But I get it that you see them here and they don't play a lot. You don't recognize that to respect their voice. And that is still important. And so those are probably our early, you know, our few years. I feel like I wish we had more time together, but I had already had my daughter and I was just, the pull of motherhood was just bigger than me really trying to stay and figure out how we could just like win championships together. I had to go,
you know,
but I loved it. I loved it. And I love Candace.
Absolutely. Before we get out of here, a couple more questions. Can you name the five other players to win the W? Obviously, there's six. You're one of them. The five other players that won the WNBA MVP and the Finals MVP in the same season?
In the same season?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, in the same season. Okay, so definitely Swoops and I.
Nope. Me. You for sure. Oh, not Swoops.
Finals MVP.
And regular season MVP.
Oh, and regular season?
Mm-hmm.
Did Asia Wilson win it once?
Yep.
Ooh, you got
no, I'm lying. Asia is not a part of the list. That okay, is a wait. Lie.
So what's the question? MVP in the regular season and the finals.
And MVP in the finals. Same season.
Maya Moore.
There's six. Nope.
There's six?
Mm-hmm. You're one of the six. There's five mm-hmm. others.
Wait, there's not that. Okay, Lauren Jackson.
Lauren Jackson is one.
Jeez, MVP of the season and the finals. I don't think Cynthia Cooper did that either.
Cynthia Cooper did?
She did? Okay, Cynthia, mm-hmm. I think Cynthia Cooper did. That's three. I need three more? You said not Maya Moore. Sylvia Fowles?
Sylvia Fowles is four.
How many more I need? Two?
Two more.
Oh, Breonna Stewart. She's
Breonna Stewart, yeah. Sylvia Fowles.
I'm missing one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, MVP of the regular season and the... Oh! No. Dang. Okay, I need a hint. Wait, who's left? Hold on.
UConn as well. Another oh. UConn Husky.
Oh, Dinah...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I thought... So she won MVP of the regular season and the finals?
Yep.
I don't know how I left D.I.D. I should have started with Diana. My goodness, what am I doing? It's hard to like gather all the names of the players. I love D. D's a baller. Oof.
This is an interesting list because Lauren Jackson surprised me until I took a step back and was like, thought about how nice she was. Like,
yeah, how she surprised me. Clearly, that's who I battle with the most. So Lauren is... You know who surprised me? Wait, you said Cynthia Cooper won
mm-hmm.
regular season MVP. Okay, that's not a surprise. Sylvia Fowles. So Sylvia Fowles surprised me because it could have been Simone Augustus. I mean, Maya Moore. That's mm-hmm. that's what threw me off.
Yeah.
So Maya Moore.
Jackson, Maya Moore did not. No, I thought just for Lauren Jackson, like, she's not really spoke about in the same lane as with all of you greats. And you know, I actually think she's incredible. But that's why it was a surprise to me because you never hear her name come up anymore.
Yeah, she should be, though. She was a force to reckon with. Like, she was nice.
Absolutely.
She was a great player.
Mm-hmm. Where do you rank yourself as far as the all-time WNBA greats go?
You know, I never really think about those types of things. It's tough because I feel like we all did great things to contribute. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I look at it like we all have our errors in our time. And there was some times where, I mean, I was hot for you know, there's a space where I was like killing it. You know, you get like MVP at an all-star game and then the regular season and then the finals and then you win the championship and then you do it again. You know what I mean? Like, there was a time where I was like, you don't want to see me, you know what I mean? But then it's like there's lows to it. Then I had like a hamstring injury. Then there's a year where I think Swoops and I were, you know, we were battling back and forth. She won, then I won. We'd win every other year. And, you know, so I think it's just we gave it our all. That's really what I could say. I gave it my all. I did the best that I could do with the resources that we had. And it's just I never think about ranking this because they're so, I mean, Diana Taurasi is an amazing player. I wouldn't want to lead the country, you know, without Swoops. Swoops is an amazing player. I feel like they wouldn't want to leave without me. You know what I mean? To like get it done, like the level of like heart and fight that it takes and just showing up every day, whether it was practice or a game, like, There's not that many players that, but you know what? Maya Moore was amazing. Absolutely. And I never played with her. I don't think I've ever played on the team with Maya Moore, you know? Yes. And I thought she was an outstanding player. So sometimes she gets left out of competition, and she left the game early.
Yes, she did.
You know? So, I mean, she was, and then Breonna Stewart and Asia Wilson. I mean, she on fire. Like, she's that lefty is no joke. The step back, like, and her motor also, her defense and blocking shots, like, she's getting better and better. And she's, I mean, so Neka Gumica, like, there's so many players. I feel like it's just almost disrespectful. Cynthia Cooper was unstoppable. And she was at the end of her career and unstoppable. Nobody could stop Coop. Not any guards that we had out there. Like, she was just a scoring machine. So I think it's kind of I never trying to disrespect the players and just name, you know, like my Mount Rushmore. I did that before. And I was like, oh, I don't like that I did that.
Yeah.
Because you leave somebody off. Everybody was really good.
I respect that. Two more questions. What was it like being a star in L.A. at the same time as Shaq and Kobe? Like, y'all were kind of, both teams were on those runs at the same time. You was out of this world as a star. They were out of this world as a star. What was that like?
It was great. I think maybe because, one, people were respecting the Lakers and the Sparks, and we were like a package thing. And, you know, we practiced at the same facilities. We played our games at the same facilities. The men supported us, which was, you know, I was telling the WNBA when we had these conversations that our number one fan are the NBA players. And I was telling them way back then, like, bro, they're come out and they support us. And we never really promote that. But, the fact that they supported us so much, you know, that they would like play ball, I would shoot before them. Derek would come in, like Kobe, obviously we just had so much like connection. And I think the biggest thing about being in LA is that it's about winning. And every season that we didn't win, it felt like a bust, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's hard to say when we only have won two championships, but I just couldn't stand it. But obviously winning MVP and other individual accolades, you know, is great, but it was about championships in LA and just, that was a highlight because we all won, and especially Dr. Buss was still alive. You know, we all won. Dr. Buss took the Sparks to Hawaii when it was like the Lakers preseason games. And, you know, he took care of us and like celebrated. So again, that goes back to that culture, you know, it's a championship culture. And so I really appreciated that. That's why I always will be there for anything that the Lakers have and supporting Jeannie Buss, because I appreciated how her father really created a winning culture and made us feel welcomed and supported us. And I know you guys are getting ready to get a women's team there, you know, in Golden State. And that's important. That means a lot. And it doesn't have to be, you know, anything big, but it is, that support is, it goes a long way. And we see that. And I'll never forget that. And I'll always love the way that Dr. Buss made the Sparks feel, and Johnny Buss and the Buss family in general, just not giving us, you know, it didn't feel like it was like this little team that they're just investing in or a tax write-off. Like, he was serious. Like, they wanted to win championships. And I love that.
Absolutely. And just, you know, as you are, as an advocate for the women's game, last one. What was it like seeing Steph and Sabrina with the shootout this past weekend at All-Star Weekend?
I really love that, Draymond. Like, I've always loved that we participated with the NBA All-Star Weekend, because we would come out and do those shooting, I forgot what it was called, shooting stars or something. And again, Kobe and myself and Magic, we were serious. We came out there, we won a few years, and we had some huge trophy. Like, so I think, again, it's the opportunity for the fans to recognize the WNBA and see that, hey, we're here, you know, we're a part of this, you know, we were trying to make our way. But what happened with Steph and Sabrina was like, that was like the stamp of like, bro, the fact that she came out, first of all, they were sitting around forever. I was like, oh my God, this could either go really well or this could go bad. Just because you know how hard it is to just like shoot and not get a full warm up. Like, bro, you got 15 seconds. Like,
it's impossible.
It's impossible. She came out and shot the heck out of that ball from the NBA line. Like, And she, it was smooth too. It's not forced. You know, she don't have like a hitchy shot, like her shot looked beautiful. And I was just like cheering, like going in. I wanted her to make every shot. So the fact that she got the 26, I was telling my husband, I said, you know what's crazy? She's not just shooting against Steph. She's really shooting against the whole 3-point contest. Because no matter what her number is, you're going to compare it to all of those men, not just Steph.
Exactly.
What happened? She hit 26. I'm like, okay, I was just, you know how you kind of like low-key praying, like, girl, I'm pulling for her because she's representing us all. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she hit 26, I'm like, that's solid, bro. She put a lot of pressure on Steph, one, but she just tied the Dame who just won with 26. Like that meant a lot. It really meant a lot. I was so proud. And I love that you guys, and I say you, Steph, like just the fact that Kobe, just the fact that you guys are like verbally so supportive of us, it really means the world. I don't know if the players that are like these young players now, if they recognize the importance of it, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but I certainly do. It doesn't go unnoticed because it's validation for our hard work. You know, we put in the same hours of just the grind of getting up, shooting balls, running on the track, lifting weights, the blood, sweat, tears that it takes, the sacrifice from your family, missing holidays. Like, it's all the same. The game is not, I'm not trying to say our game is all the same or that, but I'm just saying it's the same level of sacrifice in terms of your time as an individual, just trying to give everything you can to this sport to hone your craft. And so with that, to have you guys like really be so supportive, to see Sabrina out there and to score 26 points, it was like so solid, so amazing. And then I thought it was also great that Steph won though, because he really is the greatest shooter that we've ever seen, like ever. And I don't like the fact that people like just can't say that. Like, bro, nobody ever has shot the ball as great as that man shoots the ball consistently across this game for years. Nobody. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that we don't give people their flowers like the way that they deserve sometime. And I actually was happy that he was able to win, because it's like, bro, he's the king, but she shot that ball. I was great. I don't know. I'm so long with it, but I was so excited. I was very, very happy. I'm so proud. I feel like that mom is just like looking and watching the game grow. And I'm like, yes, represent. Absolutely. Like, I'm supportive. I love it.
No, it was huge. I had the opportunity to be there and watch it happen live. It was incredible. Man. The reception from everybody was great. To your point, I thought it was great for Steph to win. I thought it was great for her to have the performance that she had. And it's really just showing the growth. And speaking of flowers, we are honored to have you on the show. All-time great. You get your flowers here anytime. We love you. We thank you for what you've meant to the game of basketball, not to the WNBA. What you've meant to the game of basketball. I don't think people just talk about you when they talk about the WNBA. You are all-time great in the game of basketball. I thank you for coming on the Draymond Green Show. You are welcome anytime. Anytime you want to come here.
Don't forget.
You got something you need to get off your chest. You come on, and I will see you and your family at the game when we play in Miami.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Draymond. And I really do appreciate you taking the time to talk with me, and I really appreciate your support of the women's game. And are you a girl dad, too?
I have three girls.
Oh.
Three girls, one boy.
So in that commercial, is that your real daughter or no?
Yes, it is.
It is? Oh, she's beautiful.
Absolutely. Wow. She is amazing. She's the oldest. She's 9. My son is 7. And I have a 3-year-old daughter and a 3-month-old. And my 9-year-old, and I'll say this because I think it needs to be more normalized. So my 9-year-old is my wife's daughter from a past relationship. However, that couldn't be more my daughter. Her dad is in her life. Her dad is incredible. We have a great relationship, which I can appreciate because that's not always the case. And I think that needs to be like, I talk to him just as much as my wife and him talk, you know? And it's like, I think that needs to be more normal. I think that gets lost so often when like relationships fail and then it comes in between the kids and the relationship and the parents. Yeah. It's not that at all. So like, that's my baby. Like, as if as the other three are. And
no, I appreciate that. I have a blended family too. So I have, my husband has two, I have two bonus daughters that are older now. I think we got married, they were like 9 and 11. So I appreciate that, because it's, the thing is that they're gaining a parent, you know, mm-hmm. you're not losing anything. And then that communication, again, it goes, comes down to maturity, you know, mm-hmm. you're being mature enough to say, hey, this child is here and we all love her. So how can we all be the best, you know, co-parent? And that's awesome, Draymond. Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. That's
absolutely. Dope. Absolutely. No, thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you as always.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.